Allez, allez, bon.
That's it.
That means that Sankhya Yoga is to differentiate between matter and spirit. So then the goal of Ashtanga Yoga is to differentiate between matter and spirit. Okay. So as Srimala Prabhu is pointing out, then by practicing the philosophy of Sankhya Yoga is what we base our Ashtanga practice upon. Just like it said last night, that one must read the Vedic literatures. So reading the Vedic literatures means one is differentiating between matter and spirit. That's why one studies the Vedic literatures. And by differentiating between matter and spirit, then we can... that underpins or that allows us to focus on our goal during our practice of our sadhana, which may be Ashtanga Yoga in this case. Like that. Now, if you look at the end of chapter 20... in chapter 25 or 26. At the end of chapter 26, the final verse, the 72nd verse, then it says that the purpose of the bhakti yoga is to realize the super soul. Like that. So that is what the Ashtanga yoga is based upon. It is to realize paramatma, or realize the super soul. So it is all, when we say Sankhya Yoga, when we say Bhakti Yoga, when we say Ashtanga Yoga, because we are practicing Bhakti, then our Sankhya Yoga is in light of Bhakti, or it is governed by devotions, personalism. Our sankhya differentiate between matter and spirit is so that we can dedicate ourselves with devotion to Krishna. And in terms of Ashtanga yoga, for someone who's practicing Ashtanga, just like Kashyapa Muni, he was practicing Ashtanga, but his Kardama was practicing Ashtanga yoga, which is Ashtanga yoga was based upon bhakti, as Prabhupada points out. It was mixed with hearing and chanting and so forth. Like that. So does that give clarity to what you're Yeah, but secluded place where it means that just like we saw when Kardama Muni was meditating, there were other sages present. You know, it wasn't like he was just by himself. A secluded place means not many people. Doesn't mean like it has to be totally by oneself. Does that give clarification? Okay, so. Any other points?
So on the same dimension, Sankhya Yoga, my understanding is that is a Sambandha Tattva. Ashtanga Yoga comes more under the Abhideya Tattva.
It's a practice. Ashtanga is a study.
So Lord Kapila fully described basically the creation and gave the knowledge of how the 24 elements are, you know, manifested. And that principle was expanded in terms of how to practice Sankhya Yoga to become dead from the mind. So it comes under the opinion. Now it's stuck basically Lord Kapila.
Yeah. We would say there are Sankhya Yoga incorporates all three, Sambandha, Abhideya, and Prayojana, because from the beginning of chapter 25 it is Sankhya Yoga, but chapter 25 is called devotional service. So it's talking about Abhideya already, and Prayojana is also being established. So Sankhya Yoga includes all three. One portion of Sankhya Yoga, and an important part, is this Sambandha, but it's actually all three. Like that. That's it. Any other points?
This is equivalent to the Jnana Yoga mentioned in Bhagavad Gita. Right? All these verses. The 1 to 13.
Yeah, that's the same as chapter 6. Prabhupada says that in the purports. Chapter 6 is the same. Same teaching. Any other point?
At the end of the day, even if Devamati were to follow all these principles of Ashtanga Yoga, you would attain only Paramatma realization.
If you followed all of this,
yeah.
Ashtanga Yoga.
Yeah. Even with tinged with bhakti, if you follow Ashtanga Yoga, still it's Paramatma realization.
Yeah, but we'll see in verse 20, because tonight we'll do from verses 13 to 20. We'll see in verse 20, Prabhupada makes a comment which gives clarity to that point, what the actual goal is. That, but it's a good point. Yes. Yeah, because it's done with bhakti, like that. But the point will be clarified at the end of the section.
It is not necessary that Ashtanga Yoga should be devoid of bhakti. You can have bhakti practicing Ashtanga Yoga. Ashtanga Yoga is only a process by which the same process, which you can still have bhakti. You can still realize Bhagavan.
Yeah.
Those who want to stop with Paramatma is a different thing. But those whose faith is up to Bhagavan, they can realize Bhagavan.
Yeah, that's true. So we'll say in the 20th verse, then Prabhupada gives some clarity to that point. But as they're saying, that's correct.
But if Ashtanga Yoga end is Samadhi, where is the solution?
Yeah, that's the point. That's the point. That's the point that Prabhupada makes in the final section of this, the final verse of this section.
Hearing and chanting, our understanding is that the hearing and chanting naturally lead to, you know, the remembrance of the Lord. And the process of Ashtanga is to focus the mind on Krishna and basically just remembering all the time. Now, while hearing and chanting is a fundamental to remembrance, is so easy path, why would Kapila Devu in Satya Yuga, you know, go for a harder process, yogic process of Yama and Niyama and then come to visit, you know, remembrance. It's definitely, so hearing and chanting was also applicable in that age, and it is universally applicable in all the four ages, but he didn't prefer that, but he preferred Ashtanga Yoga as a means to come to another remembrance. So
why?
Yes. This is a process given by Mahaprabhu for this yoga, which has been made easy.
It is not necessary that it was not applicable for the Satya Yoga.
Any instance when Satya Yoga is done?
Well, Srimad Bhagavatam's goal is to basically glorify hearing and chanting.
Yeah, yeah. I'm saying, yeah. In Satya Yoga, any instances where only chanting and song, where which person realizes?
Maybe not only, but the point is that it's due to the psychophysical makeup like that, because the guru he engages the disciple according to the capability of the disciple. For one, he'll say you stay renounced, just like in Chalpati they have like 150 brahmacharis, is it, in the ashram, like that 150. So there's 150 brahmacharis, and many of those boys will stay renounced their whole life, very fixed. And then there's thousands of grihastas like that. So according to the adhikar, or the psychophysical makeup, then the guru will say, okay, you stay, you use your proclivity in this way, you use it in that way. So in Satya Yoga, people were so qualified, it was actually natural for them to do Ashtanga Yoga. And in Kali Yuga, we're so unqualified, it's natural for us to do Harinam Sankirtan, because we're useless at everything else. We're not good at anything anymore. Ashtanga meditation, dhyana, or Ashtanga, when we have no qualification for deity worship, proper deity worship, like, you know, according to Pancharatrika Vidhi, like very strict and like that, elaborate and qualified. We have no qualification or resource or ability to do properly. And fire yagyas, yagya, which is in Treta Yuga, we don't have any proper qualification and we don't have the resource to do it properly, actually. And the brahmanas have to be qualified. You know, before they do the yagya, they have to slaughter an animal, and then by mantra they have to bring the animal back to life, and then that shows that they're qualified to do the yagya. So there's nothing, you know, there's no one in Kali Yuga can even do that.
So although in basically, you know, the Kali Yuga, chanting of the holy name is the easiest means to attain the love of God, and we can understand, you know, because of our disqualification. But the holy name is fully potent, irrespective of the age. And anyone who picks up the process of hearing and chanting, even in, you know, the Satya Yuga, should be able to, you know, just go back to God.
So then that's the question. So then Jiva Goswami says, Purujampuru answers this question. He says, Jiva Goswami says, the reason in, even though the holy name is all powerful and can be used in any age to become perfect, but Kali Yuga is the most
fallen
age, or it's the most conducive age for Nam Sankirtan, because everyone is so disturbed. So because we're disturbed, then naturally we chant sincerely, because our minds are so disturbed. Just like my mind's been disturbed for the last few months, just because of, you know, karma and things like that. So then, you know, you have to chant sincerely. Because you say to Krishna, you know, when you're chanting, you're really chanting. You know, because in Kali Yuga, you really have to chant. You know, in order, so it's conducive for Namsa. It's not that Jiva Goswami says, not that Namsa Sankirtan isn't efficient or powerful in the other ages, but it's not... the atmosphere is not like it's not the compatible atmosphere for the process. In Satya Yuga, the compatible atmosphere for the process is Ashtanga Yoga, because the atmosphere is so peaceful, like that. So does that all make sense? Yeah.
Any other? Even in the spiritual or life, we have Dhruv Maharaj who did like Ashtanga Yoga process, but then we have the example of Prahlad Maharaj also. No, I have not heard of Prahlad Maharaj sitting and doing any Ashtanga Yoga. In fact, he used to always encourage his classmates also and everyone to chant the name of the Lord. So that time also, it's not that hearing and chanting wasn't prevalent, but like Prahlad Maharaj never did Ashtanga Yoga to give Narasimha or Bhaktivinoda.
Yeah, because the other point is that Ashtanga Yoga, when you do Ashtanga Yoga, it means you're a yogi. You know, like Hiranyakashipu did Ashtanga Yoga, right? So he went away, and like, you know, if you're living in a grihastha life, then you'll do Bhakti Yoga. So Prahlad was saying Shravana, Kirtana, Vishnu, Smaranam, Padasa. He was saying all of this because he was living, you know, in the palace. So you don't do Ashtanga Yoga in the palace. If you're going to be a yogi, then you have to go to seclusion. You go to the Himalayas or somewhere, then you do it. Any other points?
Is it, I mean, my understanding is that in this verses, he's leading from Karma Yoga, Dhyana Yoga to Bhakti Yoga, just like in Bhagavad Gita? Is it because the first, second verse too says one should execute his prescribed duties to the best of his ability and avoid performing duties? Not that. Isn't that Karma Yoga? He says you should do this, you should abstain from sex life, perform austerity. It's all like Karma Yoga, and then he talks about Dhyana Yoga, and then slowly coming to Bhakti Yoga. But he's just mentioning the same process.
Yeah, I mean, it's not that you necessarily do one to go to the other. You can do it that way.
That's right. I mean, different paths leading. Mm. Like you could choose whichever path you wanted to lead to that. So he's explaining all these paths rather than saying that you have to perform Ashtanga Yoga to come to Bhakti Yoga or not like that. You could.
Yeah, no, he's not saying it like that. He's just saying that Ashtanga Yoga is there because. That is the time he's speaking thousands, millions of years ago. So at the time he's speaking, that is the process. So the Prabhupada and the purports brings it all down to relevant modern day Kali Yuga. Like, you know, in the purports you read last night, then Prabhupada said Nam Sankirtan, Nam Sankirtan, Nam Sankirtan. He said every verse because that's what we do in this. So we just take, as we said last night, we take the principles because the principles are applicable. Like that, but the process is not what we follow. We're not following Ashtanga now.
Okay. So. No, that's what I'm saying is, he's mentioning all the processes of Karma Yoga, Dhyana Yoga, Bhakti Yoga. I mean, for us, it's that to do the easiest which we can do. So, okay, now we don't have to question why did those people do Ashtanga Yoga, not the Sankirtan Yoga. There are different paths applicable to world, whatever they like. Some people like Dhyana Yoga, some people like. So, I mean, isn't that the.
Yeah.
From what. That's what I.
Yeah, so it means that you can choose whichever path you like according to your nature, but in Kali Yuga there's no choice. There's only one choice in Kali Yuga.
But people do, like people go to Haridwar, go to Himalayas, people go and meditate on.
They do, but they're not really. I mean, it's not common. It's not common. You know, I mean, there's how many people in India? 1 billion people. How many people are in Haridwar doing Ashtanga Yoga, you know? It's like, you know, a few hundred or a few thousand or something like that. So it's not like it's a common thing. It's not applicable anymore. Any other points?
Rupa Goswami's mode is basically Raja Bhakti.
Now, what?
Raja Bhakti.
Raja Bhakti.
That's the prayana for all of us. We're coming under Chaitanya Mahaprabhu.
Yep.
Now, is there any history of any Raja Gopi going through the Ashtanga Yoga process?
A Raja Gopi?
Yeah. Who has realized his position as a Raja?
Someone has to
realize his constitutional position as a Raja Bhakta through the process of Ashtanga Yoga. Is there ever any history of such a thing?
Well, if you look in terms of Mahaprabhu's movement, then Mahaprabhu appeared in Kali Yuga. He's the Kali Yuga avatar, the Yuga avatar for Kali Yuga. So you'll only see within that tradition, like Rupa Goswami, and from that tradition, you'll only see people performing Nam Sankirtan in order to prefer to enter into that. You won't see people performing Ashtanga Yoga. It's not so much mentioned previously that Ashtanga Yoga people did Ashtanga and then attained Goloka. Probably. You know, the only thing I can think of is like Lord Brahma and the Brahma Samhita. He performed meditation, it is said, which is like something like Ashtanga. Meditation, then he realized Goloka. So yeah, it could be possible. I don't know a lot of references to it because in terms of everything surrounding Mahaprabhu, it's in Kali Yuga. So the process is Nam Sankirtan. You won't hear about people practicing Ashtanga.
The way says that those yogis attain Brahma Loka and they go to the spiritual world after the universe finishes, after the lifetime of Lord Brahma finishes, so they don't go straight to like Bhakta yogis. Bhakta yogis, they will go straight and you need to realize Bhagavan realization to go to Goloka from down.
Mm. Any other points?
Yeah, see, the gopis, they, in the previous life, they were already the very famous rishis.
Some.
Huh?
Some.
Yeah. So,
the sages of Dandakaranya forest.
Yeah. So they didn't have to do this Ashtanga yoga. They were already expert in all those things.
Yeah, those particular gopis. They had that aspiration. They were sages, rishis.
Yeah.
And then they had the desire to become gopis. So then in the next life, they took birth as gopis. And by association with the Nitya Siddha gopis, then they became perfect.
Yeah.
Any other points?
Since one of the niyama is the reading of the scriptures, and in those days, it was a shuddhi dhara, isn't it?
Yeah, back then.
So hearing as an important part of the
niyama
is underpinning the whole
Ashtanga
process, isn't it?
It's revealing it.
Here, actually, one of the niyama is, you know,
to hear the scriptures.
Reading the scriptures.
Yeah.
And in those days, actually, people used to hear the scriptures because it was Shruti Dhara. So hearing is underpinning the whole Ashtanga process. Otherwise, how can one come to the point of remembering the law unless either he hears or chants?
Yeah, he needs guidance.
Guidance.
Like that stuff. That's why it says there, it's part of the process.
So hearing was always there?
Hearing's always there, yeah. Always. Any other points? Okay, so I'm beginning to get more, I spent today studying, so I'm beginning to get a better grasp of the section now. Some of my classes I was waffling, a few of my classes. One particular class I waffled the entire class because I hadn't prepared at all, because all crazy stuff was happening in my life. So this part of the Bhagavatam is very technical, actually, and you have to study it deeply to understand it. And I'm feeling now I'm only catching up to, so now I feel like I can answer the questions better and so forth. Up until now I felt like, you know, I was giving answers, but I hadn't studied deeply enough myself to answer the things properly. But now I feel like I'm getting more of a grasp of what's going on. And at the end of chapter 28, we'll overview the whole thing. I'm thinking probably the exam will be on the 14th of July. I'm thinking. It's probably going to be the 14th. I'll let you know as we get closer, but I'm thinking. Did you say you'll be away?
I'll be away for a week from 6 to 11.
So you'll be back. But the only problem is you might miss the revision class, the overview. You can listen on the internet. Okay, so no problem. So then, at the end of chapter 20, I'll overview the whole thing, and then we'll have a complete understanding as much as we can. You know, I'll explain things as well as I can, the whole section, when we get to the end of chapter 28. So, last night, when we got into chapter 28, then it was described, what is chapter 28 called? What?
Instructions
and execution of devotional service. So, Kapila Dev is explaining how to realize the Lord, how to realize Krishna, how to become Krishna conscious. So, he explained in the first section that we discussed, the first 12 verses, the process which is necessary for one to adapt in order to understand the Lord, or become Krishna conscious, to perfect one's bhakti. So these principles which were spoken of by Kapila Dev, as Prabhupada points out, they can all be applied to our bhakti yoga process. You know, we have to practice celibacy. We have to not accumulate too much wealth. We have to live in a secluded place. Right? We have to eat frugally. Like that. So all these different things, they have to be applied to our practice of sadhana in order to make us successful. So the advice which we're given, even though it's in a different age, in a different time, in a different process, but it's very applicable to us. We can take those principles and we can apply them and we can get great benefit from them. So we should study them. There'll be something related to it on our exams like that. So you'll have to become familiar with this section. So, he recommends practicing this Ashtanga Yoga. And what is the purpose of practicing the Ashtanga Yoga? Why do you practice Ashtanga Yoga? What's the purpose or the goal?
To fix the mind.
To what?
To
To fix the mind on
Krishna.
Krishna. Or specifically, if we're talking like traditionally about Ashtanga, you fix the mind on
Paramatma.
Yeah, Paramatma, like that. So now, from verses 13 to 20, we'll go through tonight. It describes the Paramatma. The Paramatma is described.
I thought in the 11th verse, it was Supreme Personality of Godhead.
In the 11th verse, it says, by practicing the process of pranayama, one can eradicate the contamination, and by concentrating the mind, by restraining the senses, himself, and to meditate on the Supreme Person, one can. Yeah, so Paramatma is the Supreme Personality of Godhead.
Mm-hmm.
Like that. So, but specifically, Ashtanga Yoga is meant to realize Paramatma. Specifically. So now, Paramatma will be described. You won't get this information anywhere else. We've said this previously. There's nowhere else describes anything about God like this. We're going to have detailed description of Krishna, of God, what he looks like. Now, why does he look like this? Because this is the best way to look. He could look any way he wanted to look. It's within his power, isn't it? Right? Whatever's inside comes out. That's the point. Right? Someone is beautiful only if the inside is beautiful. That's the point. Right? Someone might be physically very attractive, but if they're not a nice person, all their beauty is diminished. They lose their attractive nature. But if someone is very beautiful inside, then automatically they become very beautiful outside. So Krishna is the most beautiful person, because his heart is, you know, he's Krishna. He is the most beautiful person, most loving person. So because the most loving person, then it all manifests externally. That's his form. His form is coming from, his form is eternal. Sat Chit Ananda Vigraha. But that form is all based, it's the same, what you see on the outside, which is all attractive, is what is on the inside, which is all attractive. Right? Because he has the attractive qualities. Because as the attractive qualities, then his form is most beautiful. But it's not just material beauty, right? It is all attractive. Because when someone is the most loving person, but is simultaneously the most beautiful, it captivates the heart, captivates the mind. So now we'll see actually the Paramatma through the description in the Bhagavatam. We'll actually see Lord Paramatma as he is in the heart, that his most beautiful personality, because he is a Amsa, or a part of a plenary portion of a portion of Krishna. And Krishna is so beautiful that his portions, his expansions, come to see his pastimes. This is described in the 10th canto in the Rasa Lila, when Krishna dances with 3 billion gopis on the banks of the Jamuna River. Then all of his incarnations come to witness that pastime. Because that pastime is so beautiful, even his incarnations are attracted to be. So they all come to witness like that, this pastime of Krishna dancing with the gopis, because it's so beautiful like that. And it describes that all of his avatari, which means he is Krishna in his Swayam Bhagavan, his original form as Brajendra Nandana, the son of Nanda Maharaj. He is the original personality of Godhead, so all of the incarnations are within him. It is described that all the incarnations are within his personality. But the Acharyas point out that when he's with Srimati Radharani in private, there's one Shakti which takes all the incarnations away. So it's only Krishna and Radha together, just Radha and Krishna together. Because all the other incarnations, you know, they don't have the same mood. So then Krishna, one Shakti takes them away, and then he associates with Radharani, right, privately. And then when the pastime is finished, then they come back into his form. Like that. So here's the original source.
Is there any name of the Shakti?
There is, but I can't remember. Jnanivas Prabhu was explaining it in Mayapur, in one Bhagavatam class in Kartik, like that, but I can't remember the name of the Shakti. But it would be there in the writings of the Acharyas. Okay, so now we'll have a darshan of Lord Paramatma.
I thought all the incarnations, they have got their own loka.
Their own planet? They do, but they all come, they're also within Krishna.
Also they are there as well as in Krishna.
Yeah, because the incarnations can expand unlimitedly.
Yeah.
Oh, that's
it. Like Lord Ramchandra.
Yeah.
Well,
he lives in Ayodhya.
Yeah,
but he is also within Krishna.
Okay.
Simultaneously.
Okay.
Because the Lord can have unlimited expansions.
Okay.
Oh, that's it. Okay. Text 13. The Supreme Personality of Godhead has a cheerful, lotus-like countenance with ruddy eyes, like the interior of a lotus, and a swarthy body like the petals of a blue lotus. He bears a conch, discus, and mace in three of his hands. What did we just read without looking at the verse? Describe to me what Lord Paramatma looks like.
Has ruddy eyes.
Has ruddy eyes. What does that mean?
Reddish tinged eyes.
Reddish tinged eyes. Right? Why is he reddish tinged eyes?
Interior of the lotus.
Lotus.
Interior of the lotus is reddish.
Yeah.
The same color in the eyes.
Yeah, but what's the reason?
Because his eyes are always red out of love.
Yeah, because when you love someone, your eyes are moist. Right? When you love someone, then your eyes are moist. And when your eyes are moist, they go reddish.
Mm-hmm.
So when you look at someone who you love, then automatically the eyes become moist. So Krishna is always looking at all the devotees. So because he's always looking at all the devotees, then his eyes are always moist and they're always reddish, eternally. His eyes are never dry.
But on the other hand, you also say when a person is angry, you've got reddish eyes. But
yeah, so Krishna is always angry.
Never angry.
Different point, Usha.
Would be moist.
Yeah.
Be fiery.
So the point is that you'll see in the pastime, Krishna, there are always tears gliding down Krishna and Radharani's cheeks. Now you read in the pastimes often it says that Radha has tears going down her out of love, and whenever she sees Krishna, then her eyes are always moist, and sometimes a tear will come like that, and then Krishna tears will come. It's constantly like that. What else is described?
Holding a
conch, a mace, a lotus, and a
disc,
chakra. Okay. So, what do they represent?
Narayana.
Yeah, they represent Narayana. Why does he hold these things?
It could be as an ornament or a weapon.
It could be an ornament or a weapon. So, which is it?
Yeah, in this case, it could be an ornament.
Which ones?
The conch and the disc and the flower.
Yeah, so it means the conch and the lotus are for the devotees. He gives benediction. The lotus flower, he benedicts the devotee. Like that. And the conch, he blows the conch to give life to the devotee. You see in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna blew his conch. What is Krishna's conch called?
Panchajanya.
Right? So when he blew the Panchajanya, all the devotees become inspired, uplifted by the Lord. Right, if they hear the sound of Panchajanya, then everyone becomes ecstatic. And when he benedicts with the lotus, then they become ecstatic. Right? And the other two are for the demons.
Yeah. But Panchajanya also is for demons, because the enemies got scared when he blew the conch. Right? I mean, it was the devotees were happy.
Everyone's fired up tonight, huh? Russell put too much chili in the pizza.
I haven't had any, has it?
Yeah, you must have smelt it, huh? It's true. Okay, so it's true. When they hear the sound of the conch, the Lord's conch, the wives of the demons have miscarriages. So it is true that when the demons hear, their hearts crack from hearing the sound. That's true. But generally, we say the conch and the lotus are for the devotees, and the club and the disc are for the demons. Because the demons are inimical towards Krishna, they don't get the lotus and they don't get the conch. They do get the conch, but they get the club and they get the disc. Right? Krishna, as we said in the Bhagavatam class this morning, when Krishna was angry with Shishupal, then immediately disc came. So when Mahaprabhu was angry with Jagai and Madai, then Sudarshana immediately manifests like that. So there's this for the demons. What else is described?
What it means swarthy body?
Swarthy? How does it say?
Swarthy.
Yeah, it says the colour, but I don't think, I could be wrong, but I think the word swarthy means, this is what I think it means, we have to look up the meaning in the dictionary, but when someone walks, if they kind of sway when they walk, then that's called swarthy. Like that. You know when like an elephant walks?
Yeah.
It's kind of like, and it says that when Krishna walks, sometimes it says he walks like an elephant. Like a maddened elephant. So when Krishna walks, he doesn't just walk, you know, he's kind of like swaying. Like that. So that's why, that's as far as I understand what swarthy means. But here it says sham, so I'm not sure. So what else does it say in the description? And I told you not to look at the translations, but you do. What does it mean? Cheerful, right? Krishna is always
cheerful
disposition. It says he always has a slight smile on his face. Right? Cheerful disposition. He's always in a pleasing mood.
Even in Bhagavad Gita, before he starts, Rahasati
Bharata,
says with a smile he starts talking to Arjuna.
Because everyone else on the battlefield is in a different mood, but Krishna is smiling slightly. That's his mood. So it says that he always has this pleasing disposition. He always has this slight smile on his face, mild smile, like that. And then what else does it say?
Body is bluish cloud.
What's that?
Body is like a blue
lotus. Blue lotus, yeah. So why is Krishna this colour? What's that? That's a good speculation.
It says because all the colors are contained in him, that's why it comes.
That's why it comes out as blue.
Black.
Okay. That's
Is it possible because it's his royalty is associated with blue?
Could be like that. There's actually a reason why he's that color. Like that Shivram Swami said, but I can't remember the reason why he's that color. Not that.
It's got something to do with
Radharani. It could have. Yeah, it could have something to do with Radharani. Like that. But there's a reason why it's that colour, but I can't remember the exact reason. But then we'll say philosophically, this is God's prerogative. He could be any colour he desires. So if he chooses to be sham, bluish black, then that is the most beautiful colour. and actually, what colour is the sky?
Blue.
The sky is blue. So Srila Prabhupada says the reason the sky is blue is because it is reflecting Krishna. That's why it is blue. Otherwise, why it is blue? Why is the sky blue? There's no explanation. The scientists say, oh, it's because of certain gases and this and that. But no, why is it blue? Prabhupada says because it reflects Krishna. Like that. So, just like when you're in Vrindavan, sometimes when I'm in Vrindavan and I'm chanting, then I look up, and then I think Krishna must be very close. He must be somewhere very close to here because the sky is blue. That means it's reflecting him, so he must be somewhere near. So we can think like this when we see the sky. And this way we can always remember Krishna. Everything should remind us of Krishna. So Prabhupada points out in the purport that God is not impersonal. Was there anything impersonal about this description? Hare Baba? So what's all this impersonal nonsense? Where did it come from? Is there anything impersonal there? No, that's why they won't touch the Bhagavatam. How can you touch it? Right? You can't say that, oh no, God is a light. Because there's no light description there. No, he's not. He's a person. That's the point. And Prabhupada says that hammers or smashes the Mayavadis in this section. If you read this section that we're going through tonight, if you look in the purport, it's Prabhupada just hits them very hard. He's very nirvise shunyavadi, in his personality. Prabhupada just smashes the Mayavada philosophy continuously, just smashes impersonalism. So that's Prabhupada is emphasizing this point because we must establish that God is a person. We must. Because if he's a person, then we can have a relationship with him. If he's not a person, then there's no bhakti, there's no relationship. The Bhagavatam becomes worthless. Like that. But if he's a person, then we can actually have some relationship. Like that. So this is the point. That's why it is emphasized so heavily. The Bhagavatam emphasizes it, and Prabhupada, he takes the point as far as it can go. Now, to emphasize that God is a personality. Okay. Next verse. So I'll read this and then I want you to tell me what's there, and I don't want you to look at the... You can look at it once, but don't look at it a second time. Okay. His loins are covered by a shining cloth, yellowish like the filaments of a lotus. On his breast he bears the mark of Srivatsa, a curl of white hair. The brilliant Kostuba gem is suspended from his neck. Okay, so what do we just hear?
Mentioned about the Kostuba jewel. I remember when you were talking about it, you were chanting in my house,
yeah.
About the moonlight reflecting from his locket.
Yeah.
Which is the one that's very talking about.
No, it's not.
It's not?
No, that's the one underneath it.
Ah, okay.
Kostuba money and moonlocket are two different jewels. If you go back and look at the picture tonight, right? You'll see the one underneath,
yeah.
That's the moon locket. It's got a moon on it.
Yeah.
But the one above it has a lion on it.
Is it a lion or a cow?
Cow.
Is it a cow?
Cow.
I thought it was a lion. Is it a cow? Is it?
Cow.
Yeah, I can hear you saying cow. So where does it say that it's a cow?
You said it was a cow. And also, if you look at the picture,
yeah.
I said it was a cow, didn't I?
Yeah.
Well, I've seen the cow. I've been watching it.
Yeah, last time you said it was a cow.
Did I say it last time? So what?
Yeah.
What does it look like?
It looks like a cat.
Okay, it must have been a cow then. Okay, so above the one with the moon, there's one with a cow. Right? That's Kostuba money. Right. So, what else does it say?
His loins are covered by yellowish.
His loins are
covered by yellowish cloth.
Yellowish cloth. So, say it again.
That's the pigments of the interior of a lotus.
Of the interior of a lotus, yeah. So it means that his color of his cloth is saffron yellow.
Yep.
It's golden color, right? You see that color always like that. So, why does he wear that color? Radharani is that colour. So he wears that colour because she's golden. But he wears that colour eternally. So that means it's the best colour because he could wear any colour he likes, but he wears that colour. And he wears silk. So this is his prerogative, right? If he wanted to wear anything else, he could wear whatever he desires.
Is it saffron or is it molten?
It's gold.
Molten gold.
Yeah, molten gold, or it says
saffron
yellow. Same thing, like that. You know the colour. We see all the pictures, and it's a golden colour, like that. So he wears this colour, right? That is his desired colour, like that. And what else is said?
Shrivats.
Yeah, Shrivats is a white tuft of hair. Krishna doesn't have a hairy chest, right? Because he's a youth. He's Navayovana, but he has a white tuft of hair, like that. That is Lakshmi Devi. Because she wanted to get into the Rasa Leela and she was not qualified, so Krishna said, yeah, you can stay there and then you can watch all of my pastimes with the gopis, but you cannot become a gopi. But that was as close as she became.
Is it one hair or the multiple of hair?
This is a tuft, so it's more than one. It must be like a small amount.
Bunch.
I thought it's
small bunch.
I thought it's black. I don't know why it says white.
I've never heard black. Bhagavatam's already said a number of times white.
White.
It's always said, I've never heard black. And Kostuba money, Prabhupada says in the purport, you won't see these jewels in this world. Right? You get the most valuable jewels. What are the most valuable jewels in the world?
Diamond.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know, but I think if you go to the crown jewels in London, you know, apparently they're the most opulent jewels.
Kohinoor.
Where's that one?
That's actually they took from India.
Yeah, they took everything from India.
In the museum in London.
In London. The Queen owns it, right? Okay, so the Queen owns it. So that's said to be the most valuable jewel probably on earth. But Prabhupada says in the purport, the most valuable jewels are actually in the spiritual world. The most valuable jewel is on God's chest. Kostuba mani. Right? It's there. Doesn't move. right? It's always with him, like that. And it has a cow on it. I think.
Prabhuji, there is a temple in Vrindavan.
Yeah. I don't know why it came up with the lion. Oh no, because his armbands are lions. He has the armbands in the shape of a lion.
Yes.
That's it. Yeah, okay. That's where I got the lion from. Like that. His armbands, because he has the armlets, like that, they're in the shape of a lion.
He's got cows, he's got lions, he's got shark, Makarakundala, he's got all
the animals. Yeah. Well, they all came from him, so. Peacock feather, all those things.
Probably okay. About Lakshmi Devi.
Yes.
There is a temple in Vrindavan, and the Lord has told her to stay there, so she is still waiting.
Yeah. Hmm? Whereabouts?
In Vrindavan, I forgot the name.
Yeah, on the western side of the Jamuna, she performs austerities at a place called Tapavan or Srivan.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah. So at that place, that's where she performed her austerities to become a gopi,
yes.
But she could not become a gopi.
Okay. He put her on the chest.
Yeah, he put her on the chest as
Shrivatsa.
There could be some pastime where she was asked to stay there as well. I'm not sure. But that's the place. If you go to that place, that's where she performed the tapasya
at
that place, in Vrindavan.
Yeah.
It's on the other side of the Jamuna.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay, you ready? Memorize third verse tonight. We have to memorize these things because the point is that God is a person. Right? That just like, you know, if I ask you, you know, what's your husband like? Right? And then say, oh, you know, he's wearing this colour and he's wearing that colour and his favourite colour is this and these are his favourite shoes and like that. You know the person, right? So this is Krishna. We should know. You know, devotees don't know. Why don't we know about Krishna? You should know everything about Krishna. How do you become Krishna conscious if you don't know about him? How can you meditate on his form if you don't know what his form is like? That's why the Bhagavatam is describing Paramatma. Krishna is the source of Paramatma. He also wears around his neck a garland of attractive sylvan flowers and a swarm of bees. Intoxicated by its delicious fragrance, hums around the garland. He is further superbly adorned with a pearl necklace, a crown, and a pair of armlets, bracelets, and anklets. Okay, so?
You got one mala. That's the forest flowers.
Mala of forest flowers.
Yeah.
Good. How long is the mala of forest flowers?
Eternity.
To his knees, is it?
I'm not looking. I'm just taking a guess
there. I think it goes to his ankles.
Ankles?
I think, yeah. It does mention.
Because then I can see he's got almost up to his knees.
Yeah, but I think he goes to his ankles.
But in all the photos, it is up to the knee.
Huh?
In all the photos.
It's up to the knee, yeah. But I think from memory, it goes to the ankles. From memory, like that. I have to look it up, but like that. But long garland. Right? And it says in the prayers of Narottama Das Thakur, no, actually, it says in the prayers of. Raghunath Das Goswami, that when the gopis make garlands for Krishna, they pick 7 different types of flowers. How many different types of flowers do we make in our garlands? 2. So if it's very opulent, we might have
2 or 3.
Yeah, 2 or 3, like that. But in the spiritual world, 7 different types of flowers, like that. And the flower, the long garland goes down to his ankles. I think it's his ankles, but at least to the knees, like that. Long garland, like that. Okay, what else is described? What's that?
Armlets,
right? Bracelet?
Anklets.
Armlet and anklet.
A crown.
And a crown, yeah. But in Vrindavan, Krishna doesn't wear a crown. This is Paramatma. In Vaikuntha, he wears crown. But in Vrindavan, there's no crown. He wears turban. You see, like Giriraj, because Giriraj is Shyamasunda, he wears turban with mukuts like that, and pearls like that, and flower garlands within it, and peacock feather. Just like when I do puja for Giriraj, when you do puja, you also do manasa puja. So then we decorate Right? When we when we put on his turban and we meditate, we're putting the turban on, right? And then we're putting garlands in the turban, right? And pearl necklaces in the turban, right? Then mukuts, right? Peacock feather. Like that. This is Krishna in Vrindavan. Has this look like that. So he wears bracelet, armlets, right? Ankles. The ankles have bells on them. The anklets have bells. So when he dances, right, you will hear the ch, 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 like that. And all the gopis, they wear ankle bells. So when they dance, so you can think in the Rasa Leela when Krishna is dancing, 3 billion Krishnas and 3 billion gopis. Imagine what the sound must be like. Right, everyone dancing in the same time. Right, and you can hear that sound in the heavenly planets of all the ankle bells dancing at the same time. And all the demigods come to watch. They hide behind the clouds and they all watch the Rasa Leela. And even Krishna's incarnations, they all come. And they all watch the pastime.
Did you say million or billion?
3 billion.
Three times India's population.
Yeah, on the bank of the Jamuna.
How do they fit there?
You had a question?
What happens to the garlands to the Lord? Because when they change them, they don't decompose because they're always fresh.
Hmm.
They must have a big pile of flowers and then they recycle them.
I can tell you the answer, but you got to promise not to ever tell anyone. There's one planet in Vaikuntha where they keep all the garlands. Like in the material world, we have a rubbish tip.
Yeah.
So in Vaikuntha, there's one planet just for the garlands. Like I was joking, so. I don't know what happens. All the garlands.
The flowers never die,
do they? The flowers never die. That's what Prabhupada says in this purport. He says that the garlands are ever fresh. So you pick the flower from the tree and you put on the garland, and then in this world, within a few hours, everything starts to wilt. But in the spiritual world, everything is ever fresh because it's spiritual. Like that. So I don't know what happens with all the excess garlands, or I'm not sure.
But the flowers are living and they're...
Yeah, they're all Krishna conscious.
Yeah, they are living.
They're devotees.
But they are always fresh.
Yeah.
That's why all the aroma is still there. Aroma in the
top of
this.
Eternal.
Everything is living there.
Yeah, everything is eternal.
Yeah.
Like that. But I don't know what happens with all the garlands.
And the swarm of bees, intoxicated bees.
Yeah, and the bees are always buzzing around Krishna's garland, and he very much enjoys the sound of the buzzing. And it says in the third canto, which we already read, when the Kumaras went to Vaikuntha, then the bees, when they're buzzing, then when the birds are singing, then the bees quieten down so that Krishna can listen to the birds. And then they will begin to buzz again. And they make a very beautiful sound. And they always go around his garland for his pleasure, singing very beautiful praises of Krishna, singing his names.
See those flowers, you know, because there's touchy stones there, so they must be requesting the touchy stone, and they become different color again. Right? The touchy stones are there, and the flowers, they are living, so they can change to any color they like.
Yeah, it's true.
So they don't have to change like here.
No, not like here. Everything there is eternal.
Yeah.
And anything can... Yeah, everything has a capacity. The flowers can turn into whatever colour they like for Krishna's service.
That's right.
Yeah. Okay. His loins and hips are encircled by a girdle. He stands on the lotus of his devotee's heart. He is most charming to look at, and his serene aspect gladdens the eyes and souls of the devotees who behold him. So what is mentioned here?
He wears a hip belt.
Yeah. Or he wears, you'll see, so he wears like cloth around, like he puts the dhoti on, but then there's another cloth which goes around the girdle, around that section like that. And then?
His face is very serene.
Yeah, all attractive. Prabhupada says in the purport that he is the perfection of beauty. So therefore, he gives satisfaction to all the devotees' eyes and their hearts. Because whenever they see him, everyone is fully satisfied by seeing him. Right? Their heart is fully satisfied and their senses are fully satisfied. So that's why it's very difficult to understand why we left the spiritual world. Because we were with him. So how could we have left? Right? So Prabhupada says misuse of independence. I mean, how? There's no explanation. There's no logic. How could you be with him and then want to leave him? But somehow we did.
Because you want to enjoy like Krishna.
Yeah, I know why, but I'm saying it doesn't make sense. Then he's so beautiful. That why could, how could we desire to be away from him? Because everyone is so satisfied being with him. Like that. Doesn't, there's no logical explanation. Like that.
But I read somewhere they said that we want to enjoy like Krishna. Because Krishna is enjoying so much.
Yeah. No.
And we thought we can also enjoy.
Yeah.
And then
But he also
wanted to have,
I mean, being
alone,
he wanted some interaction, right? So is it possible for his own
pleasure he created this material world then? No. No? Prabhupada says it's because of the desire of the jivas that the material world exists. It's not Krishna's desire. He's just facilitating their desire. He's not, it's not his desire, the material world. It's there. It's okay. The Lord is eternally very beautiful and is worshipable by all the inhabitants of every planet. He is ever youthful and always eager to bestow his blessings upon his devotees. So what is mentioned?
Eternally beautiful.
Eternally beautiful.
Ever youthful.
Ever youthful, yep. And?
Worshipable by everybody
from
every planet.
Yeah, worshipped by everyone, every planet. And?
Bestowed blessings upon the devotees.
Yeah, always desiring to bestow blessings upon his devotees. So that's his countenance. That means he's. Whenever you see him, that is his expression on his face. Right? His expression is that he's ready to give benediction. Like that. He's always slightly smiling and he's always willing to give benediction. But in other words, he wants to please his devotees. Just like it says that when Nanda Maharaj, when he comes home, when Krishna is very small, sometimes you see these pictures, then when he comes home, then Krishna immediately takes the slippers, the chapal of Nanda Maharaj, and puts on his head and runs out to Nanda Maharaj. And he's, since he's so young, then he's struggling to keep his balance and to keep, you know, just like when Dhruv comes, you know, he like runs and like that, and he might have like the chapal on his head, right? And then he comes to Nanda Maharaj and he gives to his father like that. So this is his mood, his countenance. He always wants to please his devotees. That's why it is emphasized by Mahaprabhu that we have to serve the Vaishnavas, because if you please the devotees, then you'll please Krishna, because Krishna's mood is always to give pleasure to his devotees. So if you serve his devotees, then you are giving him pleasure. That is the secret of spiritual life. The secret of spiritual life is to give pleasure to Krishna's devotees. Because if Krishna's devotees are pleased, then Krishna is pleased. And if Krishna is pleased, then that is perfection. That is the goal of life, to please Krishna. Okay. The glory of the Lord is always worth seeing, for his glories enhance the glories of his devotees. One should therefore meditate upon the Supreme Personality of Godhead and upon his devotees. One should meditate on the eternal form of the Lord until the mind becomes fixed. So what is being mentioned here?
One should sing his glories or meditate on the devotees of him.
Say it again.
One should sing his glories and also meditate on his devotees' activities.
Because Krishna's devotees are non-different from him. Krishna's devotees are glorious because they're connected to him. Just like Srila Prabhupada is glorious because he's connected to Krishna. Because he's Krishna's pure devotee. So when you're connected to Krishna, you also become great. Because Krishna is unlimited, right? And unlimitedly great, then anyone who is serving him, he also becomes unlimitedly great. Just like my godbrother was saying in the Vyasa Puja the other day, Purushottama Prabhu, he said, like, when he goes to India and then he visited some of the temples and they said, whose disciple are you? And he said, I'm a disciple of Tamal Krishna Goswami. And then people said, oh, want that. Yeah, because if their personality is great, then anyone connected, they also become great. So because Krishna is great, then any devotee of Krishna also becomes great because of Krishna's greatness. Like that. So that is the position of the devotees. Therefore, to glorify the devotees is as potent as glorifying Krishna. And that's why we see in the Bhagavatam, and the Bhagavatam is full of stories of Krishna's devotees, pastimes of Krishna's devotees. So whether you hear and chant about Krishna, or you hear and chant about Srila Prabhupada, or you hear and chant about Prahlad Maharaj, right, any of Krishna's devotees, his pure devotees, because they're absolute, because they're eternally associated with Krishna, and they're on the spiritual platform, you get the same benefit. Just like my spiritual master wrote to me many years ago, and he said, it is, you get the same benefit, it is equally beneficial to glorify the Guru as it is to glorify Krishna. Right, to glorify Krishna and to glorify the spiritual, it's the same. Right? You get the same purification in the heart. Like that. So this is the duty. The duty is to glorify Krishna and Krishna's devotees. Okay. Then it is said that the perfection of yoga is to fix the mind upon Shama Sundara. Prabhupada says within the purport. Premanjanat Charita Bhakti Valochanena. The whole purpose of the yoga process is to fix the mind upon Krishna. That's the goal. So for bhakti yogis, then we are meant to fix our minds upon Lord Shama Sundara. Just like Veda Priya, when we went to Vrindavan last year, she brought me some beautiful pictures of Radha Shama Sundara in Vrindavan. And then recently I got them framed. And then they're in my temple room in my ashram at the farm. And when I chant, like in the lounge area, then I can look into the room when you come to visit me, any of you ever come there, then you can come and see. Then when I'm chanting in the temple, in the lounge room, I can look into the temple room and I can see their forms there. Like that. So then it's very beneficial for the chanting. Because the goal of the chanting, we're chanting Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. We're chanting 25,000 names of God a day. And most of my rounds I chant in this particular place, right? And when I'm walking back and forth, I keep looking at Krishna, I look at Shama Sundara. And it's very effective for the chanting. To connect the Naam to the Rupa, to the form. This is what is being taught here. The goal of yoga is to fix the mind upon the form of Krishna. That's why the form is being described. So therefore you chant and you have the form of Krishna there, the deity, right? Like I chant in front of Giriraj, the deity is there, or the picture is there. And by chanting, that's why I used to like chanting in your lounge room, is because that picture was there with Krishna. And such a nice picture. It has the moon like it, it has the Kasturbamani like that. So when you chant, then you are meditating upon Krishna. The chanting becomes so much deeper. When you're actually seeing the form of the person who are you're speaking the name of, like that. So this is the goal of the yoga process. Prabhupada says that within the purport, there are eight kinds of deity forms. The deity can be made of eight different types of substances. What are the eight types of substances?
Clay, stone, marble,
jewel,
wood, stone, metal, sand.
Jewel, stone, painting. Very good. So these are the eight, right? Clay, wood, sand, wood, metal, stone, marble, jewel, paint, and mind. Right? Now all of these are equal. It's the same. Just like if you have a picture of Krishna, it is deity. Like if you don't have deities in your home but you have the picture on the altar, that is the deity. It's not that Krishna is present. Non-different. If you meditate on Krishna in the mind, as we see in the Nectar of Devotion, the Brahmana meditated on Krishna in the mind, and then when he touched the sweet rice, his thumb was burnt. Right? It's the same. The deity is the deity. It doesn't matter which element it is made of, it's the same thing. Just like in Vrindavan, if you go to Varshana and you walk up onto the hill of Morkutia, then you'll see there is one ancient painting which is 250 years old, which was painted by a blind Vaishnava, of Radha and Krishna dancing as peacocks, like that. And this painting is so potent. Did we go up there? We didn't walk up to the top of the hill? Vaishnava?
Yeah, we
didn't go up.
We didn't go to Morkutia.
We didn't go up, huh? How come?
We went to the other temple.
Up the top,
yeah.
The main temple.
Yeah.
Maybe we didn't have time or something. Maybe it was during the service. Quite often. No, he was there. But for some reason we didn't go up to the Morkutia. But there's a beautiful painting there. So that painting has so much potency.
Where?
In Varshana.
Oh yeah.
Like that where Radharani lives.
Oh yeah.
Like that. So you go up to the top and this painting has so much potency. Like that. It is a deity. Radha and Krishna are manifest. And there's many pictures like that in Vrindavan, actually. You'll go to certain temples, there's pictures there, but pictures of Radha and Krishna are manifest like that. So the point is that the deity is manifest in any of these eight forms. And Prabhupada says it's not different. The deity in the mind and the deity on the altar is not different. You can worship either, and it's the same effect. Like that. I'll just see if there's any more points that we have to make. The Prabhupada says in the purport that unless the mind is fixed on Krishna, because the goal of yoga is to fix the mind on the form of Krishna. That's the goal. So if we have not attained that state yet, hands up if you have not attained that state yet, where your mind is fixed on Krishna. Right, we haven't attained that state yet. So then, Prabhupada says in the purport, you have to continue your yoga practice. Continue your sadhana. Right? Until you get to this point where your mind is fixed on Krishna. That is called samadhi. That is the goal of our yoga practice. That is prema bhakti.
That's it. Yeah. You were saying about, like we remember Shyam Sundar, in the morning you were saying Gaura Sundar.
Same person. Okay. Thus, always merged in devotional service, the yogi visualizes the Lord standing, moving, lying down, or sitting within him. For the pastimes of the Supreme Lord are always beautiful and attractive. So this is an interesting point that Prabhupada makes in the purport, that hearing and chanting are easier than remembering. That is one reason why we don't practice the Ashtanga yoga process. Because the Ashtanga process is based on smarana. Right? It's based on remembrance of the Lord. That's very difficult, especially in Kali Yuga. Because it's based on the mind being very controlled. Just like, you know, you try to think of Krishna. Right? After 10 seconds your mind goes somewhere else, right? So therefore in the Ashtanga process the whole point is to bring the mind fixed. We can't control our mind for 5 minutes. We can't control our mind for 5 japa beats. Yeah, we can't control our mind. It's so difficult to control the mind. So therefore the Prabhupada says it is easier to hear and chant, because when you hear and chant the Maha Mantra, right, then the mind, because of hearing and because the touch sensation is involved by touching Tulsi Devi, and the sense of hearing is involved in hearing the sound of the mantra, it keeps bringing the mind back. And the eyes are absorbed in seeing the form of the deity. Right? So in this way we're engaging the senses. It's easier for the mind to to focus like that. We have to learn, just like my spiritual master said on the day that he initiated me, gave me first initiation in the Jagya, he said we should just chant Hare Krishna and just hear the Maha Mantra. He said that's all. Right? Just chant Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram Ram. Just hear the sound of the mantra. That is what we are meant to do. And by meditating and absorbing ourselves in the sound of that mantra, working in and becoming deeper in our japa, right, and hearing the sound of that mantra, then we become purified. The mind fixes on Krishna. Then one can begin to remember Krishna. That's much easier in the age of Kali, when we're not so qualified. Sometimes we fall asleep in class. We're disqualified for Kali. So we have to control the mind, you know, by hearing and chanting is the point.
So what is the meaning of this life? When there is sound vibrating, praising the transcendental pastimes of the Lord, however one is supposed to hear.
Where is it?
In the text 19.
Okay, when there is a sound vibrator praising the transcendental pastimes, however one is forced to hear. Yeah, that's what we just said. That if one is hearing, it's easier for the mind to focus than just remembering.
What transcendental pastimes? It's not a name.
When the sound vibrator praising the transcendental pastimes. Yeah.
So when we are doing the japa, we are not remembering his pastime, we are just saying his name.
Yeah, so but that's hearing also. Same principle.
Maybe the that means the bhajan.
It can mean the bhajan, yeah. Mm-hmm. It can. Okay. That's it. Okay. Final verse. In fixing his mind on the eternal form of the Lord, the yogi should not take a collective view of all his limbs, but should fix the mind on each individual limb of the Lord. So Prabhupada points out in the purport that what is the purpose of this Ashtanga process? What is the purpose? This answers Jagannath Brahm's question from the very beginning of the class.
Samadhi.
Yes, samadhi. What does samadhi mean?
Fixing the mind on the
on the form of the Lord. It's to meditate on the form of Lord Paramatma. Right, but Prabhupada says on the purport that that is not the goal for the bhakti yogis. We don't want to have passive relationship. We don't want to have shantaras. Right? We want to have at least dasyaras. It means there should be some active service. Not that we just meditate on the form of the Lord, but we should want to serve the Lord. When we see the deity of Krishna, we don't just want to look at Krishna, we want to do something for Krishna. You know, you want to cook for Krishna, you want to make a garland for Krishna, or you want to dress Krishna, or you want to do some seva, right? You want to put some chandan on his feet, tulsi and chandan on his feet. There should be an impetus or a desire to do seva, right? And it's not enough just to look at him. Just like if you're married and you just look at your wife all day, or you just look at your husband all day, right? After some time, you know, the wife says to the husband, you know, that's enough. Yeah, why don't you go out and work? Yeah, it's nice that you look at me all day, but it's not paying the bills. We have to feed the children.
Yeah.
Right? So it is not enough just to adore, but one has to do seva. That's the point. It's not enough just to look at Krishna. You can't go to the temple and just look at Krishna. When you see Krishna, that's Prabhupada saying in the purport, when you see the form of the Lord, from the heart there should be a desire to do seva. That's the point. Should always be thinking. Yeah? Does the deity need something? Just like when we have the deity in the home, we don't just walk past the deity all day. You know? That's why I have Guru Raj in a temple room. I have his own room. I don't like to have him in the lounge room or the main room. Because in the lounge area, everyone just does casual things. You know, you sit on the couch and you talk, and then you take some prasad, and then you know, everyone's chatting. And then, oh yeah, and there's Krishna. And then, you know, we just keep going on. But that's not the mood. Right? When he should have his own room. or if he's in the common place, then that should be the place where everyone is centered on him, right? And the devotee should always be attentive to his desires. Right? Is there enough light for him? Is it warm enough for him? Right? This is called, if we go deeper, maybe one day we'll speak about this more deeply, but this is called Atmavan Seva. Atmavan means as I am feeling, that's how the deity is feeling. If I'm cold, the deity must be cold. If I'm hot, the deity must be hot. Why have you got an air conditioner for you but not for the deity? How come you have, or how come your room is warm but the deity's room is cold? How come you have enough light in your room but he doesn't have enough light in his room? How come you eat so many nice things but he doesn't eat nice things? Yeah, you offer him a couple of pieces of fruit and then you have a big tully. Now what where's the logic? Right? He is the king. Right? Everything is offered to him first, then we take prasad. That's the move, like that. So Prabhupada is pointing this out, that when we serve Krishna, there should be that desire to do seva. Service. Like that. Okay, so we'll stop there.
The wrong thing there.
Yeah.
We think that his body is transcendental and our body is just material. How can I mean?
But if you think like that, then you'll commit offences. You'll commit offences because he is a person.
He's a person, but he's a body.
So then in Vrindavan, everything in Vrindavan is prasadam. Everything in Vrindavan is already prasadam. So then Harisori Prabhu said to Prabhupada, so then why do we offer everything to the deity if it's already prasad? And Prabhupada said, because Krishna is hungry. You got a point, Jamuna? Yes, that's what I can.
Even
then,
we were told
that
we also tell our children to set up an
altar.
Usually,
hey, you too. Stop making so much noise. Shh.
Usually, to have the altar in the main room because Krishna is the center of the house, so we should not keep him in the room and lock him up and then just forget. So he should be in the main room and the house. The main, like, you know, sometimes in normal households we see the main corner is occupied by.
Yeah, that's there, but then the point I was making is that then if the main room is the lounge room and then the television's there and this and that, it's not, I don't think it's appropriate for the deity. Okay, isn't it? Who's talking? If the deity is in the main room, but then that's okay, but then he should be the emphasis. He should be the center of attention. You know, there's a television in that room also, and you know, people, they may even take prasad in there, and there's couches there, and everyone just, you know, I don't like that. Just like sometimes you go to people's places and the deity's in the main room, and then we sit down and take prasad, right? And then they don't put a curtain over the deity or anything. I don't like that. You know, I don't eat in front of Guru Raj. And when I receive Guru Raj, one of the instructions I receive, Bhakti Santa Swami says, he said, never take prasad in front of the deity. Now, it's offensive. No one takes, it says in the Nectar of Devotion, you don't eat in front of the deity. So that's why I have Guru Raj in his own room. It's a temple room. Yeah, you know, we don't eat there, right? We don't. There's no prajalpa there. It's like in Guru Raj's temple room, it's also my study. It's where I prepare my classes and everything. So Veda Priya comes in, she starts to talk to me, and then I say, let's go out. You know, because when we're in there, it should be all centered on Krishna. That's the point. So it's okay if he's in the main room of the house, but he has to be the center of attention. That's the point. I don't feel comfortable like just sitting on a couch and, oh yeah, the deity's there. And, you know, because when you're with your friends, you just talk prajalpa, and it's not really appropriate. It says in the Nectar of Devotion, you don't talk in front of the deity. Like that. Anyway, you can think about those things.
If you put the deity in the lounge room, then each time you go in and out, you have to pay off senses, haven't you?
You could have a picture rather than the deities. Yeah. I mean, in a place where you're walking. But the deity has to be given the right importance. Like, you have your bath, when you go in the room, you know that you've got to be pure, you've got to do that.
Yeah, when I go into Guru Raj's room, I don't offer obeisances every time.
No?
I offer obeisances in the beginning of the day and at the end of the day.
Okay.
I don't like it because, you know, otherwise I'd be offering my obeisances like 30 times a day. But the point is that when you're with him, then you should be conscious of him. That's the point. Any other points?
Well,
ashram, is it alright to have a curtain because it's very hard to have a separate room for duties?
Yeah.
So is it okay to have just curtain? So when we are offering, we just offer, we have curtains open, and as soon as the offering is over, we just pull the curtains back up.
And then take prasad.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
or if we are sitting or anything.
Okay. Srila Prabhupada ki. So next week we'll continue chapter 28. We may finish the chapter next week.